All right, everybody, welcome to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Now, if you haven't already, go check out the Lacrosse Alpha Burley Pro. It delivers an athletic and glove-like fit that will hold the foot in place to prevent chafing and rubbing while on the move. It's 100% waterproof. It comes in a variety of camo patterns, comes in a variety of insulation options, and it's just an overall great boot. So go check out lacrossefootwear.com.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear.
We're in British Columbia, Canada, at Pacific Bear Outfitters Bear Camp. I've got Devin Jewell, owner of Pacific Bear Outfitters, to my right. We've got a campfire to my left, burning famous Canadian softwood.
And it's raining.
It's raining on the tarp above us. And we've got a bear, two bears drying in the periphery of the camp. And I've got Daniel Roop, the outlaw preacher, directly in front of me. We're drinking camp coffee. We've been sending text messages to our families via the Garmin InReach this afternoon.
They should sponsor you.
Garmin InReach should sponsor us.
But they won't.
And we're waiting on the camp, the soul of the camp, Dave, to return. The camp cook is gone. He took the bear meat back to about 7 hours away. Back to get some of the bear meat taken care of. And so we are here. Daniel killed a bear on the second day here in British Columbia. I killed a bear on the third day. And Devin Jewell is...
I ain't killed a bear this hunt.
Devin's not killed. He's the only one who hadn't killed a bear.
Come on, Devin.
This week.
No, so Devin is a... Devin is a veteran northern big game hunter. He's guided. How many years have you guided in between, like?
Like 16 years.
Okay, 16 years. So you've guided in northern British Columbia. You've guided in the Northwest Territories.
Here.
Those two places.
And here.
And, well, this is British Columbia.
Yeah.
So you've guided in British Columbia and the Northwest Territories. And what species have you guided for?
Black bear, grizzly bear, wolf, wolverine, moose, caribou, stone sheep, mountain goat.
Cougar?
That's pretty much it. Oh, yeah, cougar, yeah.
Okay. So Devin has experienced a lot of kind of the pinnacles of big game hunting. You know, so Daniel and I are from the South, and like typically people from the South are going to be whitetail hunters, number one. They're going to be turkey hunters, number two. And we're making some good bear hunters coming out of the South these days too. But so like hunting these kind of what are like exotic northern animals to us is pretty cool. And there's lots of guys that are drawing tags and are going on guided hunts for these big animals. But British Columbia is a pretty darn unique place. And so what is British Columbia known for?
Everything. What do we got? We got dall sheep, northwest corner, stone sheep, north, mountain goat, the bulk of the North America's mountain goat populations in British Columbia, 60,000 of them.
Let me stop you right there. So the bulk of North America's mountain goats are in British Columbia. So yeah. The range... Okay, so we've been learning about mountain goat. We saw a mountain goat yesterday in British Columbia. And so these goats are living in really specific habitat where basically where extremely rocky, rough terrain that they can navigate and where they can escape predators. Wherever that type of habitat is, that's where they live.
Yeah.
They don't want to be in the woods. They don't want to be in these alpine pastures like
Oh, yeah, they go to the alpine, too.
But they're going to be within escape reach
of
big cliffs.
Yeah.
Because
that's their thing.
So they can't outrun anything. Like,
yeah,
we're pretty sure the outlaw preacher could.
He would run them down.
He could run down a mountain goat.
I will run them down.
And so that's pretty cool. But they can out climb
anything. Yeah.
So they can just scale these cliffs that just are unfathomable. So 60,000. So the Coast Mountain Range runs through British Columbia from the north to the south.
South to north, yeah. Then you have the Rocky Mountains run south to north the entire province.
That's more on the western side of the eastern side of the province.
Yeah. So those two run the entire distance.
So British Columbia is partially unique because it has two significant mountain range running the entire length of the province.
Yeah.
Okay. Now see the Coast Mountains. Man, people that named this place really understood geography. They're close to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So the Coast Mountains are close to the coast. The Coast Mountains are going to go from like sea level
to
about 9,000-ish feet. And so we described in depth in the other episodes about how, I mean, just everywhere we're looking at these big, huge, snow-covered mountains. We are down lower in these, like, denser, what looks just like thick northwest rainforest type areas with moss, huge trees, lots of logging, lots of logging roads, lots of cut blocks. But we're looking up into this, like, these big mountains. And a lot of these mountains have these big rocky shelves at the top. A lot of these mountains have big glaciers at the top. And that's where these mountain goats live.
Yes.
And as a BC resident, like, how can you hunt a mountain goat?
Well, some areas are lottery and some are just open, but you're allowed one a year, like over the counter.
So as a resident of BC, you can go buy a tag that you're going to have a decent chance of actually killing a mountain goat?
Oh, yeah, you get one every year as long as you're a climber.
As long as you're a climber.
Yep.
So the challenge in hunting them is just, it's not hard to find them.
Generally, no. I mean, you gotta get to where they live, but that's climbing is important for sure. But yeah, they're not hard to spot. There's good populations of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the challenge is what when you're hunting a mountain goat?
Just hiking. That's most people's challenge.
What about finding a goat that you can shoot that you can also retrieve?
Yeah, you might have to look at a few, but I mean, for the most part, if you're in an area with a good population, you're going to see a number of goats, and then really it's just getting to them, getting to a shooting position.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what was it the other day when we were up on that ridge, and you said sometimes if you shoot a goat on a ridge like this, it'll just
launch
out.
Yep. When you're like, if you hit them, they have a tendency to just they head for that scary terrain and they die halfway there and. Over they go. Meet you at the bottom.
You also told us that for those of us who are not residents of a province or state where mountain goat hunting is something that we have access to, in terms of guided hunts, a mountain goat hunt is one of the cheaper of the
mountain game. Yeah.
The mountain game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so you could get into a mountain goat hunt for $8,000 to $10,000.
I think eight to twelve for sure. I think 11 would be a fairly common price nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just for clarity too, Pacific Bear Outfitters guides for black bear and mountain lion.
Yeah.
Devin's not guiding for the big mountain game. Devin is working for some other outfitters.
Yeah.
Doing that just for clarity. But you get to experience. Tell me what you told me. Like, you get to experience all the same things that, like, a Yeah, doll sheep or stone sheep
hunter. It's a similar hunt to like a sheep hunt, but more, it'll have a higher success rate. And, but you're doing the same concepts, the same, you know, high mountain trekking and all that stuff that sheep hunting's well known for, but it's a much more available hunt for sure. And you're going to have a higher success rate because they're just a more stationary animal.
Right. And personally, I just like the way mountain goats look.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think they're a spectacular animal. I think if sheep didn't have the kind of the reputation, the iconry that they have, that they would that a goat, like if you were just to take someone that didn't know anything and you put a mountain goat and a sheep side by side, I think a fair percentage of people would say, would pick the mountain goat as a beautiful, majestic, awesome animal that they'd like to hunt. So, I mean, but the sheep kind of, because of their scarcity, and because they do have majestic antlers, no doubt.
Horns.
And they live in majestic places. They're a spectacular animal. But, I mean, a mountain goat's kind of the same way. But mountain goat isn't nearly as expensive. And
it's a very similar experience overall, the hunt.
Right, yeah. Right. Dan Roop has just soaked the fire.
Sorry.
And so you're hearing lots of popping and crackling. So that's mountain goat. See, I didn't realize that British Columbia had the most mountain goats of any province or state. That's really interesting. So, what other big game opportunities do you have here in British Columbia? Like personally, that you're going to go hunt a lot of years.
Mountain caribou, Rocky Mountain elk, Roosevelt elk, Canada moose, white-tailed deer, mule deer, black-tailed deer. Then, of course, we have Rocky Mountain bighorn, California bighorn, black bear, mountain lion, wolf, wolverine, lynx, and bobcat available.
Wow. How many of the 29 big game animals are in British Columbia? Do you have any idea?
All those ones I just said. I don't know.
I just wondered if there was like, well, there are 15 of 29 big game animals. I guess all the super 10 would be here though.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Bear, caribou, moose, deer, bison.
Oh yeah, bison. We have bison.
We have bison.
I forgot bison. Yeah.
So I mean, this is like a tremendous province, and you can get almost all those tags over the counter as a BC resident.
Almost all of them, yeah.
You told me that there are 180,000 resident British Columbia.
130,000. 130,000 resident hunters in BC. Yeah.
Okay.
In an area that's, I don't know what you compare it to down there. Not quite as big as Texas.
But a huge
it's
area.
It's almost as big as Texas, yeah.
Wow. And, but of those guys, there's not, like in the States, it's pretty common for there to be like, there's more big game hunters than there would be in Canada. Am I correct?
Well, you'd have, like the state of Pennsylvania has a million hunters. So, I mean, that one state has more hunters than all of British Columbia.
Right. but I guess just serious hunters. I mean, there's not as many.
No, you're not going to see like super avid guys. I don't know how you gauge that though in a population, but I mean.
Right. Right. True.
I guess days spent. So how many of that 130,000, how many would spend more than 14 days hunting a season? That would maybe be a way to gauge it. And then after that, how many would spend more than 30 days?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right. So. All right. What? Devin just slapped the outlaw creature.
I have like 50 in the tent.
So,
I just give them away.
Talk to us about, tell us about, well, I'm going to ask you a question about your moose.
My moose?
So, Devin killed very large moose last year in northern BC?
Northwestern BC, to be more specific.
Northwestern BC? Okay. So, there are, let me see, three subspecies of moose.
Three or is there four? Because there's a lot. Is there Eastern Canada and Western Canada, or just?
Well, the shower moose is anything in.
Yeah, that is him.
The United States, Canada moose, yeah, and Yukon moose.
Well, there'd be a Eurasian moose too.
Well, for the North American Super Slam.
Yeah.
So for the North American Super Slam, so talking about North America, there's going to be three species of moose. Shower moose, Canada moose, Yukon moose. Mm-hmm. Yukon moose is the big daddy of the moose.
Big daddy.
And Yukon moose are going to be in Alaska, Yukon,
Northwest Territories.
Half of the Northwest Territories. Okay, the Canada moose is going to be, is going to stretch.
Every other single place.
Every other single place other than the United States.
Yeah.
They're going to be Canada moose. And typically Canada moose would be much smaller. I mean, especially like in Eastern Canada.
Yeah, you gotta remember too that like a province like BC is 3,000 kilometers long. So a moose from the northern part of BC is a lot bigger than a moose from the southern part of BC, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So
if you want a big Canada moose, it makes sense to hunt where they get the biggest, which is in the northern part of the provinces.
Now, when you say biggest, are we talking like Bergman's Law biggest? So Bergman's Law is the further north, the further that you get away from the equator, the larger that mammals get
to conserve heat,
to retain heat. So like a white-tailed deer that's in Florida is super small, like a Keys deer. A white-tailed deer in Saskatchewan or Manitoba is much larger. Same species, they could interbreed, but they've developed a smaller body size to be advantageous to release heat, but also to retain heat. What were we going to say, Dan?
So when you're talking about moose, and like, so Yukon moose are the biggest?
Mm-hmm.
When you say the biggest, you're just being a deer hunter, Arkansas, knowing nothing about moose other than they look huge.
Mm-hmm.
That big means width of antlers,
no,
right?
Body and antlers.
Yes. So when Yukon moose is like, oh, it's the granddaddy of the three types in the North American world, how much, like,
double
the size?
Yeah, so if you killed a moose in Utah versus a moose in Alaska, you're talking about almost two completely different animals.
So just,
they look similar, but the size would not be similar.
So the horns are literally twice as large.
They could be.
Yeah, they could be.
It's kind of a gradient scale.
I would use body size. The body size would be double. It would be wider, deeper, taller, just a bigger animal.
Okay.
And then, yes, the antlers could be.
And a big old bull moose could weigh 2,000 pounds?
In Alaska, Yukons? Yeah, probably. They could be up into that neighborhood for sure. Whereas even in southern BC, I bet you if you killed a 1,000-pound moose, that's about as big as it's going to be.
Okay. Southern BC, more like Utah.
Yeah, of course, if you kill a moose in the Rocky Mountains 5 miles north of the USA-Canada border, you're hunting pretty much a shire moose, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you hunt one 5 miles south of the Alaska-Yukon border, you're hunting a lot, but you're still in BC.
These are man-made lines that are imperfect. Yep, imperfect, Dan. They're imperfect. So, yeah, what he's saying is correct. So it's the same species, but they're just different. And, you know, a few years ago, there was a world record shower moose killed in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a monster moose.
It was a huge moose.
Oh, it was a monster. I mean, it was like
huge.
I've seen it. I actually saw that moose. Where did I see it? Bass Pro in Springfield when the Boone and Crockett had their big game banquet there 2 years ago. That world record shower moose was there, and I don't know, it was probably in the 60s, maybe even 70 inches.
Yep.
I can't remember. It's huge.
Wow.
So there's exceptions anywhere you go.
Yep.
In general, they're going to be a Canada moose is the mid-grade moose, which they gauge, when people are talking about moose, they gauge moose based upon widest width between antlers. So like you would say that's a 50-inch moose. And that would mean if you just took a tape measure and just measured to the widest point on the left, that side, to the widest point of that side, that's a 50-inch moose.
Okay.
So 70-inch Yukon moose would be like world class.
Oh, very much, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything in the 60s is world class.
No doubt. So 60, if you went to the Yukon and killed a, or wherever,
61-inch moose,
you're at the top of the heap. But in Canada, much of Canada, guys are shooting probably 40-inch moose and being pretty happy with it. So, the Devon's moose was a Canada moose. Granted, it was at the...
just right below the Yukon border.
Just below the Yukon border.
Okay.
And so just tell us, kind of give us a little bit about that hunt. So you were with your wife and...
yeah, we flew, a group of us flew into a lake where we'd hunted several times. We hunted during the rut for 2 weeks-ish. I think day 4 or 5, me and my wife called in a very big moose and shot him, 64.5 inch, so very big.
So how many people were in the hunt with you?
5.
And so y'all are all at the same camp?
Same camp, same lake, but we'd split up.
Was
the
old
hunt.
Dave with you?
Yeah.
Old Dave.
Who would take care of camp?
Did he just stay at camp and he hunted, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He usually shoots the one that comes to camp.
I'll be done. Old Dave.
Which is like a pretty, not a certainty, but it usually happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old Dave playing the camp card.
He
Old Dave
just hangs out at camp and shoots the most that comes to camp.
More or less.
I could totally see him doing that.
So Dave is the camp cook and kind of like the... Devin and Dave are like inseparable sidekicks, like Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin.
And we've decided that we like Dave like much better than Devin.
Makes sense. He's nicer.
Guy. He's way nicer than Devin.
This wasn't the one that your wife was going to shoot.
Yeah.
So
what, right out from under.
So
I was going to dig into the details. So there's 5 people in camp. So Dave's in camp.
Yeah.
2 people are you and your wife, Ashley.
Yeah.
And then there's 2 other people that are just your friends.
Buddies, yeah.
We're just going to leave them nameless.
Yeah. Smart.
Okay. So they go off somewhere to hunt.
Yeah, everybody kind of splits up.
Kind of goes to the other side of the mountain or something.
Yeah, or to the other. Like, the lake is like, how big would the lake be? Right, it's probably like 10 miles long, right? So
did you have boats?
Yeah, we got canoes, so you can like...
did you fly canoes on the...
I did a different year, yeah. Like, they've been, we leave them there over the...
You leave them there?
Yeah, we just tie them up in trees so bears can't get them.
I'll be darned.
And then, so then when you get there, they're there. So yeah, like you split up, go to one end of the lake, other end of the lake, or whatever, right? Lots of space. You're not going to run into each other again.
Wow. And so you and Ashley were hunting together...
yeah.
You canoed out that day?
I think we just walked the edge of the lake that day, because I don't remember why. I'm pretty sure that's what we did, though. So we just walked down into an area we knew, like a meadowy area, and then it had been raining, so it quit raining, and we just kind of stretched out in the sun to dry out and fall a bit on the edge of this.
So are you using a moose call? I mean,
no,
like
just my hands.
So you're just cupping your hands?
Yeah.
So when these guys are moose hunting... when these guys are moose hunting, they're a lot of them use a birch bark horn
or a plastic horn
like a poly horn that is like a funnel, basically like a gas funnel, and it amplifies the sound because you're calling moose that could potentially be miles away.
Yeah. So the part of the reason that moose's horns are shaped the way they are is to funnel sound into the ear. Like an antenna dish.
I had no idea.
They're such a low density animal that the way they communicate has to be very long distance communication. I've seen a graph one time that showed the way that sound, any place on the palm of that antler,
it reverberates right to it.
Reverberates to like the exact same spot.
You know those like military radar panels?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that look like? The same.
So, like, the geometry of the shape of their horn, like, reflects sound right in. So they can hear exceptionally well.
Wow.
And so, when you call moose, you get into a favorable location where you can hear a long ways, where you think moose are, and you call. And the moose you're calling may not answer you even that day.
Because they're so far away.
Or he may not even answer you the next day. And, the third day, he might show up.
Yeah.
So you've been calling, and he's been coming the whole time.
Wow.
It's possible.
Potentially. That'd be pretty far. But
okay, I'm stretching the truth. I'm from Arkansas.
Like in the mountains where we hunt, is there'll be the mooses will have beds way up right below tree line, like in the valley. So if you're at the lake calling, they're sitting up on the mountain, and then they're right? Because you're below them, they can hear really good.
Yeah.
And then they're up on the mountain and... Like, and that could easily be a mile, like, or a couple miles, like, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, give us a female moose call.
Are you sure?
Yeah, what's it sound like?
Daniel, I like it too much.
Daniel,
uh-oh. I'll try to contain myself.
Okay. Yeah, it's just real nasally, kind of just like, you know, some animals.
You can make it like louder.
You can make it louder. Wow.
What's really cool, you know, some animals have this like majestic sound, like an elk bugle. It's like a majestic sound, just like loud, and a moose is like not that way. So a bull moose would make a sound like what? Like, so let's say you do the, you know, you do the female moose call, and the response would be,
but that's just their vocal noise. They would make way more noises than that, like banging the antlers, like the front of the antlers, swinging it into a tree, just a clunk. That would be one. That's just one noise they'd make, or they'd rake trees with their antlers, like
wow.
So those would be like the three main noises they would make.
So you would hear that just, they call it grunt.
Yeah.
They call it bull grunt.
Wow.
And, so and when, how and far now, would you say that you can hear a bull grunt?
Oh, miles. If it's still and calm, like not if it's windy, but
sure.
If it's still and calm and, you know, that, like clear, cold, and they're coming from a ways off down the valley where you could hear, and it just keep like coming for like it took like an hour for that bull to get to us easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, keeps coming.
You imagine like
getting
a...
louder and louder as he comes.
And that is, it's like super exciting.
Yeah.
I have been on a moose hunt one time for 4 days in Alaska before I killed a brown bear. And we never even really worked. Well, we worked one moose. Like worked meaning we cow called, the bull responded, and... we were like, this is going to happen. Just one time.
One time.
And it didn't happen. He answered us back like at fairly close range.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell you this, but like on the third or fourth day, we cow called and won.
Yep.
And I mean, we just were like, it's on. And man, there is something exciting about calling an, you know, 1,500 pound animal. Like turkey hunting. You turkey hunted, Dan.
Yeah.
You call. Here they come. So,
but this is like calling in a bulldozer.
No kidding.
And so, another, you know, and then he's saying that they communicate a lot with the sound of their antlers. So when callers are calling, they also whack trees and bang on stuff to replicate the sound of another bull with this female.
Because you're trying to trick him. Like if you're trying to trick him. If that's the dominant bull and he hears some other guy with his cow, he's going to be like,
Uh-uh,
you ain't with my cow right now. Uh-uh.
So, you'd walk from camp. Was it morning time? Was it evening time?
No, that was afternoon. That time.
So, had you left camp that morning and, like, not come back? Or had you been at camp?
I think we'd left in the morning and just hadn't come back yet.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been out all day. Like, the end of the lake from camp was probably, like, an hour at least just walking the shore of the lake. So it's a fair piece.
Yeah. You were at the end of the lake. And so you called, and then did the bull respond immediately?
No. We probably called for, I'm going to say, like a half an hour to an hour. I don't remember exactly. But then when he did, like, I for sure heard him at that point, like multiple grunts. But then it was just, like, steady coming for, like, another, like, hour or even a little longer than that.
And you and Ashley were just, like, both set up?
Yeah, well, to a degree, you can tell he's a long ways away, so it's not like a rush. That's
your
time.
How far could you see?
150 yards in that meadow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's just slowly coming.
Yeah.
Did you continue to call?
A bit, but not crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, because if he's coming, you don't want to give up more information than you need to, right? Like, if I heard him come up and like, ooh, and he would like stop and pause like he was listening... then I would be like, okay, I think he's waiting for me to tell him I'm still here. So I'd like give like one, like a short call, just like a, I'm still here. And then it's like, you could hear him pick up again and keep coming.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
So, but you don't know how big this moose is. Like,
no, you just hear
you can't tell
it
by
could be
the
a 2-point.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. You can't tell by the grunt, really, if it's like a 50-inch bull or a 30-inch bull or a small bull. But he's just coming, so you guys are pretty optimistic.
If you hear big antlers, you know.
Yeah, if you hear stuff like
like that clunking thing, only big bulls do that.
Wow.
Yeah, or like big raking, right?
Dan, we gotta go moose hunting.
I love to.
You and me. Okay, so
I can't do it.
That was a crow call. Don't crow, don't crow call. Yeah. So the bull's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point do you like know this is a done deal? Because in almost all types of hunting, there's a moment when you're like, he ain't getting away.
I knew he was coming. Like, that seemed very obvious, but you still don't know until he was...
He could hang up out there just out of sight.
Yeah, he could. I didn't get that impression, though. From this guy's, like, action, he was just coming.
He was coming.
Yeah. And then, but you don't know how big it is until it's there. So until he's in that 150-yard open window, you don't actually know what's... Because we're not going to shoot anything but a larger male, right?
So what was the... So there's no antler restrictions.
No, in that area, no.
So you could have shot any kind of male moose.
Anything with antlers, yeah.
So what was your internal governor?
Well, we're looking for like mature bulls, right?
Because that's could have been like a 50-inch moose.
Yeah, I don't worry about width personally. So things I would be looking for would like big fronts. So like I don't want like a crab pincher. What we call crab claws on the front, that's a 2-point on the front with a paddle behind. I want like a four, like a palms in the front.
Yeah.
And then I want like a long paddle with lots of points. So if it was like, it could be 50 inches wide and have 5-foot long paddles, that would be like, who cares how wide it is?
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But this one just happened to be wide and long and have big fronts and like every single thing you could dream
of. So what was it like? Did he step out of a clearing or?
So there's like a pine, like a timber pine edge on like a bit of a, not a ridge, but a bit of a ridge kind of. So he had to come down about 50 feet. So he like come up through those pine trees and then down that open like grass ridge kind of spot and down into the meadow.
So at what point did you see him?
When he came out of those pine trees.
How far was he?
150 yards.
Was that in range for you?
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah.
Now, do you have a scope on your 45-70?
I did this year. Yeah, this last year. But usually I run iron, actually, yeah.
Usually you're shooting iron sights.
Yeah.
But you were using a 45-70.
Mm-hmm.
What was actually shooting?
30-06.
Okay. It's totally a girl gun.
Yeah.
Oh. No, I'm just kidding. 30-06 is like the gun of North America. Okay.
The do-it-all gun.
The do-it-all gun of North America. So the bull comes out, and you, at what point do you realize this is a whopper?
Well, as soon as he came out, I seen his antlers, and was like, yep, that's a shooter. I mean, they're big.
I mean, did you think it was a 64-inch moose?
I wasn't too concerned. I just knew it was a shooter. I mean, I could tell it was bigger than normal by quite a bit.
Did you get excited?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
What's Devin Jewell look like when he's excited about a moose?
Pretty much the same as right now.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring. Stone face Canuck. Just doesn't give anything away.
All legs, no smile.
But so then I wanted to wait for him to stop moving, though, because he's, like, walking. And, like, at that point, I'd say he was coming, for the most part, like, head on. And their antlers, like, because when he walks, he's, like, swinging his antlers every time he grunts, right? Mm. So they're, like, back and forth. So it's, like, you don't really want to take that shot.
He's coming to you.
Yeah, he's coming, and he's not like, I know you guys are people, right? He's like, I'm going to go get me a lady moose, right? So he's just like on his way over, and then there was like two, not big trees, but bigger trees. And because, like, as he had gotten closer, we had split up to get two different shooting positions. So Ashley was over, and I... You know, we were spread out.
How far apart were you guys?
Not far, just to make sure we could cover these two, like, imagine this meadow had like two little tails.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make sure we could shoot each tail.
Depending on where he came from.
So he just came out, and as he crossed, he came behind one of those bigger trees. And I had like, as he stopped, I had the perfect shot. And actually, she could see his like hindquarters. So I just shot him. We weren't taking any chances.
Yeah. So did he drop?
Yeah, he just went down.
Went down. Where Wham. Did you shoot him?
I just went point of shoulder. And
was
he was still,
quartering
he
two?
Was quartering two.
So, okay.
Point of
so
shoulder,
like Dan's
so it went.
Bear.
Yeah.
Except he hit him right in the shoulder. In the shoulder.
He hit him in the shoulder.
Yeah, in
yeah,
the shoulder.
Yeah, so he would have been like, if this was his head, like that, like.
And that
point
just
of shoulder,
took him
he
down.
Just went, yeah, he just folded up and fell down.
Man.
And then it was probably 70 yards at that point, so by the time I walked over there, he was dead.
Wow. So what grain bullet are you shooting out of that 4570?
That was the HSM 430 grain.
430 grain bullet. Probably flying 1,800 feet per second or something.
I think it's 18 something, like almost 19, but I can't remember exactly.
Give me an idea to compare what's the grains of the bullets.
Well, like, we're shooting a 212 grain 300 Win Mag, and that's a heavy bullet. 200 grain, 430 grain bullet. I mean, that's like
twice the diameter too.
That's like chunking a rock at them.
Yeah,
you know. So
it worked.
So with rifles, yeah, there's a. Sometimes you want speed because speed kills as well. Like the hydrostatic shock from a really fast bullet is going to be significant.
Especially on like a deer.
Yeah. But these big heavy guns shooting like this are big for big game. Because
hey,
for
you said
big
hydrostatic
game.
Shock the other day to me, I had no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, hydrostatic shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hydrostatic shock would be. That when an animal is shot with a bullet, it is not just the actual piece of copper and lead going through the vitals that kills it, like an arrow. Like an arrow, the only thing that's killing that animal is there's an arrow slicing through,
yeah, the hole.
Cutting, making a hole.
Yeah.
The hydrostatic shock is that bullet's flying so fast, when it slaps something with water in it, that water is pushed out so fast that it just like shocks and breaks down the electrical system of the animal.
Wow.
Hydrostatic shock. So, pow! Just being slapped.
Bruising, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's the best technical definition of hydrostatic shock, but.
Probably.
It's
animals
in the ballpark.
Animals are like us. They're essentially water.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, with a gun, you could actually maybe hit in the trajectory of the bullet, miss the vitals. But potentially the hydrostatic shock could disrupt their system so much that it still would die. Would you agree with that?
On small animals.
Yeah. I mean, you want to get them in the vitals. That's not what I'm saying, but no. So, 430 grain bullet out of a 4570. And now you like a big caliber, and you like shooting iron sights a lot, just for the heck of it? Just kind of like old school
iron
throwback?
Sights, just like pretty fun.
Yeah. I like it. And so you walk up to this moose. You're not carrying a tape measure with you, are you? Please tell me you weren't.
No.
Okay.
We had to wait till we got back to town to measure it.
Okay, but you knew it was a...
Oh, yeah, we knew it was big.
Whopper.
Yeah.
Biggest moose you've ever killed.
Biggest one I've ever seen killed, even.
Okay,
yeah.
Even in your guiding.
Yeah.
64-inch. Okay, so tell me about the rest of the antlers.
The length of the paddle is exceptional.
So the paddle would be from the fronts...
It would be like 5 feet.
Wow.
So just like, it's got, if in the world of moose, it's got everything you would ever want.
Yeah.
And we have some nice ones, like 58-inch, 53-inch.
Yeah.
Yeah, with big paddles.
Yeah.
And this one is like, makes those ones look like little baby mooses.
You know, so for reference, too, in Alaska, Yukon moose, biggest moose in the world, the minimum antler requirement is typically, you're right, for a non-resident, it's 50 inches. So in Alaska, you guys shoot a 50-inch moose.
Four,
and I mean, that's a monster moose.
On the front.
Yeah, or four on the front, or 50 inches, that's right.
Okay.
So you kill this massive moose. And what did you do? Did you start skinning it right away, or did you go back to camp and get Dave?
No, everybody... else we assumed heard the shot, so we actually lit a fire to get rid of the bugs, and because you never know who else or what else is out in that part of the world. So if you have a fire, it's obviously going to be...
So you were worried about grizz.
Not worried, but it's nice to have a fire while you work, because you're going to be there for hours, right? Like, this is not like a small...
Test.
It's not like a deer.
Yeah.
This is like, you're going to be there for like 6 hours working.
Oh my goodness.
Right? So you might as well just start a fire.
Yeah.
Get a fire going.
Hey, if there's one thing I've learned about Devin Jewell hunting with him twice here in British Columbia, the man loves fires. Mm-hmm. And so do I. I would start a fire like every morning when I go to the global headquarters, mm-hmm. like out in the front, just to have a fire. Mm-hmm.
But you have a wood-burning stove.
No. No. No, I'm going to, though.
In your heart, you have a wood-burning stove.
Yeah. So you start a fire.
Yep.
Start a fire, and you guys start working.
Yeah, well, first thing we did is pictures.
Pictures, okay. Yeah. Start taking some pictures.
So there's like an hour.
Yeah, okay.
And then, start working, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what time of the day is it?
I'd say it's probably like 2 or 3.
So what time's it getting dark?
8-ish.
You had a lot of time.
Yeah, we actually got it all out of there that day.
Did
so
you
we
really?
Did pretty good.
So
yeah.
Did the guys end
Yeah, everybody
coming?
Showed up.
They came to you?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you have any way to communicate, like with Garmin
and
Reach?
No, they just
anything?
Heard the shot.
And so here they come.
Yeah, eventually.
That's pretty cool.
Probably took them like an hour or something, right?
That's cool.
Yeah. So then.
So did any of the other guys kill moose?
They had opportunity to kill moose, but they got caribou and grizzly. Like, kind of, we all went out and we got a caribou and a grizzly. Well, we had lots of grizzly opportunity.
Really?
Yeah. And then they almost got wolverine. And they could have got smaller moose, but I mean, you're holding out. If you go all the way there. You want a big one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were flown into this lake.
Yeah. And you got to remember, if you pull the trigger there, you got to fly all that meat out, too. So you don't want to just be like, we'll shoot 3 little ones in one, right? Because every time you drop something on the ground, it's more currency to get it out of
there. So it costs, you got to pay to be
meat,
flat.
Yeah, meat in. Flights cost extra money, right? So.
Wow, meat flights.
I mean, like $600-$700.
First time I've ever heard that.
Yeah.
Meat flight.
So meat flights are usually like half cost, but it's still like a lot of money. Yeah.
Wow. Man, the adventure of that kind of hunt is just almost, it's just like off the charts. The opportunity that you guys have as BC residents is just crazy.
Phenomenal.
It really is. But, and... All week we've grieved the loss, hopefully the temporary loss, of the grizzly hunt here in BC. Mm-hmm. On our first day black bear hunting here, we saw what we believe was a big male grizz mm-hmm. up just below the snow.
Yep.
In kind of an avalanche chute.
Yeah, kind
was
of
it
a
cross chute?
Between an old log dairy and an avalanche chute. Like, it's an old log dairy, obviously, but it has an avalanche through it.
Right. So we saw a big BC grizz, and just this year, the political climate of this part of the world shifted a bit, and they without scientific reason, without the instruction of scientific wildlife management, they chose, based upon popular emotional opinion, to close the grizzly hunt, which is kind of a big deal. Because the reason that the North American model for wildlife conservation has been the most successful husbandry project of wildlife in the history of mankind is because we've used scientific wildlife management to instruct our decisions about wildlife. And so this is totally not that.
This is just
urban people that there's more of them than there are of us, and they don't understand. They didn't understand. I mean, they just don't like the idea of grizzly hunting, so they voted it up.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but...
Oh, no, we didn't even get to vote.
Okay, we didn't, huh?
No, we didn't even get to vote.
Right.
They just said that's what was happening.
Okay.
And for that reason. There well, was
I
not
guess,
even a vote.
I guess when I say the vote, it would be that there's an elected popular official that
would
lean
that direction.
Yeah,
but if it
had
voted, it might not have even, like, we're not even sure if it voted if it would have lost even. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the chance that with a regime change in the future that it could we could get it back? Do you think that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If a reasonable government gets back in, we would for sure probably have a chance to reopen it.
Yeah. Unreal. Well, so that was your fall 2017 season. Mm-hmm. Just your personal hunting.
Yeah.
You and your wife. Like, this is not... Yeah, this is just like you and your wife. What else did you take last year?
I didn't take anything else. My wife shot her biggest mule deer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How big was it?
Probably 140.
Yeah.
4x4. Yep.
Nice. Nice. Well, awesome. Awesome moose. Closing comments from the outlaw preacher, Daniel Roop?
Nope.
None?
No.
What do you think of... What, I mean, having been here, this is Dan. Dan's like asleep over here. This is your first like adventure type hunt that we're on, because we're on black bear hunt right now.
Yeah,
we've killed our bears. You hear his stories about flying in on a float plane.
Oh man!
And hunting in a place where grizz, mountain caribou, moose. I mean, like, does that not? What's that?
I mean, when I hear the term meat flight. It's just, it's a whole world that I have no idea about, but could really only dream about. It sounds amazing and awesome.
Yeah. Devin Jewell, closing comments?
Nah. I don't know what else to say.
All legs and no smile. Canuck.
No closing comments.
Just keeping his cards right again his chest. Yeah.
How?
All right. So, we're about to go out and look for a bear, maybe. We don't have bear tags, but we're going to look for a bear. We've seen a bear every day this week. All right. Out.